This episode is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, May 20th, 1901, actually May 21st, 1901, Connecticut becomes the first state to pass a law regulating motor vehicles, more specifically passing the first speed limit law for cars in the United States. Now, listeners, I'm going to give you a moment to guess what the speed limit was in 1901, the fastest you could go. The answer in 3, 2, 1, 12 miles per hour. That is the fastest you could go in 1901. That's in the city. When you get into the country, you could really open up the throttle and drive 15 miles per hour. Really let your hair down, set loose. Here to discuss the first speed limit law for cars in the United States are, as always, Nicole Hemmer of Columbia and Kelly Carter-Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
So, Kelly, some context. This is not the first speed limit law in general in the United States, right?
No. So these laws are really old. They actually date back to 1652 in the colony of New Amsterdam, which is now New York, issued a decree that no wagons, carts, or sleighs shall run, rode, or be driven at a gallop at the risk of incurring a fine of £2 Flemish, or about $150 in today's currency. So speeding was no joke, even in 1652.
And so the limit there was gallop, right?
Yeah, gallop.
More of an eye test, but you know,
you want to keep it at a trot. Yes.
That's right.
And that's not an insignificant amount of money. So I mean, clearly they were trying to regulate this.
Well,
or maybe they were just trying to raise some funds like they do now, right? Maybe they'd figured out that trick way back.
They had quotas for the number of gallopers they stopped.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But you can understand. I mean, later in like the 18th century, they have laws against like driving your carriage too fast on Sundays. And a lot of it is about keeping the peace, but also being safe, right? An out of control wagon or a fast moving horse, a galloping steed, could do some real damage. And there was a sense that it was both disturbing people, but also sometimes kind of scaring them.
In 1899, a New York City cab driver by the name of Jacob German was arrested for driving his electric taxi at 12 miles per hour. That is the first instance of a speeding ticket in New York City, really, that we could find for a non-carriage vehicle.
Also, I feel like Jacob German has to have some terrible luck. Because he doesn't have a speedometer, and it's not like the police have radar guns. Well, so how do they know he was going 12 miles per hour?
Yeah, no, this is where my mind is going too, and this is, I think, a big important point of context. So when you get to what we're talking about here, there are starting to be some speedometers on the cars themselves. That's a big sort of piece of this puzzle. In I think 1901, Oldsmobile has one in their cars, but there is no sort of, what do you want to call it, third-party verification of how fast it's going. And so I suppose it's just
a guess.
But you get to know what is, you know, what looks like 10 miles per hour, what looks like 15. But yeah, I mean, I wonder how many people were able to talk their way out of a ticket by saying, officer, like, you actually don't know how fast I was going. I do. And like, I was going 11, not 12. But, you know, it's not until the 1950s that there's actually radar and sort of ways to verify third party. Unless, I guess, I don't know. I guess you can do, like, you can stand there with a stopwatch and time and do some quick math and figure out
how
fast
someone's going. Get out your slide rule, kind of figure
right,
it out.
Exactly.
That's time for that. They will have been long gone by the time.
You...
I mean, they're
trolling
around at 12. Exactly.
But, Kelly, I do want to paint this picture of, like, in 1901, obviously, like, massive transformation, you know, sort of modernity writ large exploding. But, like, on city streets, right? And when you look at pictures and early footage, it's chaos is one way to put it.
Yeah.
But it is also like truly like the old world and the new world are butting up against each other on the city streets. And so this, you know, this notion that we have cars but also pedestrians but also bicycles but also electric taxis and all of these and trolleys and trains and horses, of course, are all right there trying to share the same space.
It is prime for regulation because there's no way to sort of control the chaos of traffic without rules, without regulations. And so it's interesting because I think we really take for granted all of the planning that was put forward when you think about like cars and car culture, not just the speedometer or the speed, but also, you know, like license plates, driver's license, the, you know, urban versus rural. Like there's so many things that go into play when we think about how people respond to stoplights, to stop signs, when's it fair to turn. I mean, there's the regulations are innumerable, but at the same time, once you get your driver's license in our current moment, we don't really think about, it's sort of second nature, all of the maneuvering that takes place to keep people safe.
Yeah, you know, that mention of new world versus old world, that's embedded in this Connecticut law, because you would have to slow down if you were coming up on a carriage or a horse. Like you couldn't go the maximal speed limit. But also, I think what Kelly is saying is exactly right. There's a whole infrastructure that needs to be built, and an infrastructure not just of roads. Remember, everything's infrastructure. So not just roads, but traffic lights and sidewalks and laws, not just speed limit laws, but things like jaywalking laws, so that eventually you get those pedestrians out of the street and onto the sidewalks, because they were getting killed left and right by these cars, as you can imagine. So there's a lot that goes into creating a car culture in the United States.
And this is all before like DUIs and driving under the influence. Sure. That comes so much later. Like,
but yeah, I mean, you can see in the first half of the 20th century, the United States basically reorients itself around the automobile in all sorts of ways, and we're still living with that. You know, obviously, we haven't done any episodes on like tearing up streetcars or anything like that. But you know, I mean, clearly that's this is part of that story.
We're just going to screen Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh my god, Who Framed Roger Rabbit is in my like Mount Rushmore of best movies ever. And my number one answer to what's a movie that actually holds up, Who Framed Roger Rabbit really holds up. It's so good. Anyway, I could go on for a long time about Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Podcast.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Wow. I mean, like, safety is a big issue here. Like, now, you know, I don't know, we think more in terms of, like, airbags or seatbelts or things that are meant to keep you safe inside the car. But speed limits are also meant to protect those outside of the car that are all around you. And so when you think of how the fatality rate and how it drops as a result of these speed limits that are put in place, it's really a big deal. I mean, you think about the fact that like in 1972, the deaths go from about 4.28 per million miles of travel to about 3.3 in 1974 to as low as 2.7 in 1983. And this really makes a big difference, you know.
And this is as more national speed limits are coming into play and they're sort of like becoming more standardized across different states and so forth. Yeah. And then what happens? What, in 1995, right, there's this moment where they repeal, I remember this, they repeal the national speed limit? Is that what happens? And basically back to the states?
Yeah, so they had this federal law where they would withhold highway funds if your maximum speed limit was over 55. So that it essentially creates a federal speed limit of 55 miles per hour. And that leads, as Kelly was saying, this pretty stark decline, almost halving the number of traffic fatalities. But people like to go fast. And so they were like, actually, you know what? We're cool with more fatalities. We would really like to open it up. And so you get the repeal in 1995 of the federal speed limit.
And I remember that, you know, it went back to the states. A lot of states didn't really make any changes or tweaked it a little bit, you know, 75, 85. And then Montana for 4 years said, no speed limit. Just do your thing. Drive whatever you think is safe. And I think that the language was just basically a reasonable, safe speed. That led to a lot of accidents. I mean, you know, this is one of those things where it's like,
which is surprising because you think Montana is like, I don't know, I think wide open spaces, who are you going to hit kind of thing.
Fair enough.
But
I remember.
Apparently when you're going up. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to, and this is across the country, just as speed limits, I mean, it's just one-to-one. As speed limits go up, there's more fatalities. As they go down, there's fewer fatalities. And you have to find that balance. That Montana law was eventually struck down, but there was that four-year period where I think a lot of people were trying to get to Montana to just really open it up and see how fast they could drive.
It's the libertarian dream.
Yeah. Well, on that point, actually, Nikki, and I'm curious if we can go back to 1901. I mean, was there any, as you can see it, both with this speed limit thing, but just in general, was there any like libertarian response to, hey, this is government overreach, you telling me to only drive 12 miles per hour in the city and 15 in the country?
You know, I wouldn't put it past libertarians to have raised a stink. I haven't seen evidence of a ton of that, but the car does eventually become this place of libertarian fantasy because it is the cars become automobiles become heavily regulated in the United States. And so when there are seatbelt laws, to a certain extent, the speed limits come up against this. But there is this idea that it's my car. And particularly if you're protecting my safety, I'm the person who gets to decide whether or not I want to wear that seatbelt, whether or not I'm going to use my cell phone, whether or not I'm going to have all of these safety features for my car, whether I choose to buy a car that doesn't have them. And so there is a lot of libertarian angst around the car that also extends to whether or not the automobile is protected by the Fourth Amendment from illegal search and seizure. So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, it gets complicated really quickly, especially if you start thinking about the future and like driverless cars or all of that. It's wild.
Yeah, I have a thought about speed in general, which is something I think about a lot. And this might be the chance to say it, but you know, I guess I'm starting to think about this image we're painting of a streetscape in 1901, and you know, the sort of chaos of that, and I know there's part of us that wants to mock like, oh, 12 miles per hour. That must have been so scary. But, you know, I also want to acknowledge like that, you know, that was genuine speed at that time. And like every time something goes faster, it is scary. And that's actually something I feel like I want someone smarter than me to write the book, like kind of how speed explains the world or whatever, because I just do feel like at the heart of so many of our anxieties about modernity is this notion of speed. And like I even see it in like the cancel culture conversation that like so much of it is not just that it happened, but that it happened so fast or that like the way, you know, we even did that episode about reporting election results. And so much of that was just about like the speed being a little faster than we're comfortable for. And like the modernity always being a little faster, and it creates this tension. And so this is where my head's going a little bit with this. And maybe this isn't any great insight, but it just feels like speed and a sort of like, we're going too fast. Anxiety is at the heart of so much of almost everything.
Well, no, that's an excellent question because it compels us to ask sort of like, what should be the pace of progress or what should be the pace of change and how we come to it? And especially when it comes to automobiles, I think, you know, I think about the speedometer too and the fact that like, in my car, I think it probably goes like 160 miles per hour. I know my car can't go 160 miles per hour. But for the aesthetics of just having like an even number around, it won't stop at 80, you know, or it doesn't stop at 90. But like, you also have to ask the question, like, why would you have it go to 160 if there's no way in the country you could go that fast legally?
Right.
Like,
That's the like allure of speed, right?
Yeah.
And that's every, you know, throughout our whole country, it's like we want to go fast, we want to have this ruthless efficiency, but then when we actually get it, we're like, oh, I don't know, maybe we should slow our roll a little bit.
I'm gonna tell you, I would read that book. So if there are any any authors or any publishers out there who are listening,
who's this is the good right idea author for this, like some big swirling. I don't know. We'll think of who it is. But yeah. Okay. We just want a small cut.
That's right. No, just like 5% of the royalties at most.
Okay. Fair. As we wrap up, let's do a couple of these also on this days. It does feel like this May 20th, May 21st date, there is a bunch of like stuff that feels like it's harmonized in some way. So, for instance, in 1875, this is when the Meter Convention was signed. 17 nations got together and established the International System of Units. So, you know, not dissimilar from regulating speed limits. Like maybe May 20th is the day on which you kind of get your act together with regulation and standardization. In 1927, speaking of speed, on this day in 1927, Charles Lindbergh took off from New York to cross the Atlantic for Paris. This was on the Spirit of St. Louis, the first nonstop flight from New York to Paris, which blew people's minds, mm-hmm. not to put it mildly. And then 1775, Nikki, the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, it is allegedly signed in Charlotte, North Carolina in 1775. And we say allegedly because apparently a group of people got together and declared their independence from the British Empire and apparently forgot to tell anyone because it's like 44 years later when they finally discover this piece of paper that says, you know, the Declaration of Independence, which happens a good year before the United States formally declares independence. But these guys were early adopters, not great on spreading the message that they had done so, though. If independence is declared in a forest.
But in their hearts, they knew that they were independent.
That's right. They were free inside.
Yeah, but I just love that notion of declaring something, not telling anyone.
It really cuts against the idea of declaring, doesn't it?
Yes. And the most important also on this day, May 21st, but not May 20th. But Kelly, it's your birthday.
Yeah, it is.
Happy
it is.
Birthday.
Yay.
I'm excited. I have plans, but that's okay.
You have what?
All I want to do is sleep and a break for my kids. That's it. My I keep it simple.
That's the greatest gift of all. All right. Well, happy birthday. And Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you as always.
Thanks, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. You can get in touch with us with any questions or comments or ideas for the show. Email us thisdaypod@gmail.com, or you can find a form at thisdaypod.com. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon. Support for This Day in Esoteric Political History comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you'll need to join the millions of others who have switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thisday. That's odoo.com/thisday. Odoo, modern management made simple. Radiotopia.